This weekend, it's 50 years since Neil Armstrong became the first person to walk on the moon with the landing of Apollo 11.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
That was 50 years ago. Well, 1 year ago, the Australian Space Agency was established to transform this nation's space industry and help build international collaboration on space. The goal of the Australian Space Agency is to triple the size of the space economy in this country from nearly $4 billion to $12 billion by 2030 and, of course, to inspire the next generation of space entrepreneurs. Anthony Murfitt is the deputy head of the Australian Space Agency. Anthony Murfitt, welcome to breakfast.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
You've got this target to triple space sector's economic contribution to more than $12 billion a year and create up to 20,000 more jobs by 2030. How are we going so far?
So, Fran, we come back to our purpose of growing and transforming this globally respected space industry. And I would say after a year, I think we're on the right track. In the first year, what we've done as part of our mission is to open doors internationally. So we have spoken with countries such as the US and the European Space Agency about opportunities to collaborate. And we've signed MOUs with countries such as the UK, Canada, and the UAE, which are very targeted on identifying where Australia can play a role in what is this growing space economy.
Our investment is quite small, though, if you think of the Australian Space Agency budget, just a fraction of NASA's budget, of course, but the Morrison government's committed $47 million, I think, to establish the agency. There's an extra $19.5 million for Space Infrastructure Fund. Does more money need to be ploughed into the agency so you can, not necessarily compete, but, you know, work alongside the other major international agencies?
So we've got...
We would be a minnow.
So we have, I think as the Australian Space Agency, we've got a very strong foundation to grow. It's the government's investing $73.2 million over the next 6 years. What that shows, though, is the role of government has changed from where it was in the 1960s, which was the wonderful Saturn V rocket, and we're recognising we landed on the moon.
We were launching rockets.
We were launching, and Australia did launch its own satellite back then, but we're in a very different world as it relates to space. And now we're in a place where businesses, small, medium, and large, can actually create their own business propositions. There are companies such as Rocket Labs we've seen in New Zealand that are creating their own launch capability and providing and launching small satellites into the market. And in Australia, we're seeing some of those opportunities unfold.
So this is not a national space program. This is a supporting commercial opportunities.
Yeah, coming back to our purpose, it is about growing the space industry. So we're not a NASA. It is not a $21 billion budget. We're actually a partner and facilitator, work with industry to identify opportunities for them to invest and have opportunities with international projects as they unfold. And the other part is why the government is investing in space is that space touches on all of our lives. We use the little blue dot in our maps to find where we're going. There are new technologies being developed by Australian businesses that can actually connect directly with satellites, and they're tiny little chips around 3 centimetres by 5 centimetres. And what that means, these chips allow, for example, farmers to better manage their resources across their land. So not only are we seeing this huge shift in paradigm from what was once a realm of government, we're seeing the use of space being applied to every part of our lives, whether it's shopping, whether it's finding where we're going, or even helping with disaster management. And as that role emerges, what the agency is doing is growing and transforming, is identifying how space can be part of our lives and how businesses can invest. But importantly, you need an agency to open those doors internationally.
Can I just take you back in time? This is a long time before you were even born, probably. But in the 60s, you referred to it, we were one of the first nations to launch a satellite. We were launching or testing rockets in Woomera in South Australia. We played a vital role in the Apollo 11 mission through the tracking stations of Honeysuckle Creek and Parkes. But our role declined, virtually stopped. Why was that? Was it a lack of ambition, a lack of funding?
I think, yeah, so there was, we had the Apollo missions and we were all reflecting that was a great achievement. And from there, there are different opportunities that emerged. And I think we did see a lull in activity, but I think the important part is organisations like CSIRO continue to play a role. So while we might not have been launching rockets and undertaking satellites, we had the likes of CSIRO through their tracking facilities continue to support NASA through all those years. What we're now seeing in the 2000s or coming up to 2020 is that this global space economy has completely transformed, where it's actually significant government investment is not required to make a difference in the space economy and create those jobs that we're looking to achieve.
It's 12 past eight. Our guest is Anthony Murfitt, Deputy Head of the Australian Space Agency. And yet the head of NASA just last week called on Australia to get on board with the US ambition to head to Mars. Will we be doing that, and how will we be contributing to that?
One of the exciting things that we've done with the Australian Space Agency, there's been the release of our civil space strategy, which is that 10-year path about how do we actually grow the economy and achieve the tripling of the economy. Within that document, we outlined some of the opportunities and strengths that Australia can play. And one of those areas, and as the NASA administrator last week said, you know, Australia has an opportunity in an area called remote asset management. One of the great things that Australia has technology-wise is if we have a look at the resources sector and we take the example of the Pilbara and the activities that are undertaken, much of that is actually controlled in Perth. Within that, we've got in the Pilbara 1,600 kilometres of autonomous rail. We have the drills. They're autonomous. The drillers, I was behind the driller and she was drilling from Perth, and it was being undertaken in the Pilbara. And when we think about space, it is a far distance away. It actually needs a level of autonomy because you're not always going to have humans there. And that opportunity for Australia to plug its technology into what other countries are considering in space activity, that's the area where Australia can play a role.
Which is a lot more autonomous activity.
In activities such as going back to the moon, there is going to be a high level of autonomous operation.
Now, you know what you just said will trigger alarm in some people, because there is some concern from others and a lot of ambition in other parts for mining in space. A lot of ambition for mining of asteroids, you know, mining the moon even, mining Mars. Is Australia going to be a part of that?
So I think the first part is Australia is signatory to something called the Moon Treaty, which sets the conditions for how nations who are signatories to those treaties will operate. So I think that's, we're always mindful of meeting our obligations.
And that's about sort of the global commons, but there's already nations trying to find their way through that and corporations pressuring governments to, you know, allow them in under that to make profit, isn't it?
Well, we're actually seeing, and I think this reflects the changing nature of the space economy, where it's gone from just governments and now commercial businesses are considering what that means. So if we actually turn to the broader issue of what is space mining, I think the early opportunities actually around are there, how do we look at water resources on the moon? And the reason people are looking at that part of the story is that if we're looking to return the first woman and next man to the moon, we need oxygen to breathe, we need water to drink, but we also need fuel water, which is hydrogen and oxygen, can be used in a multitude of activities. So I think that's why.
So this is the frozen ice on the moon that was discovered has been transformative.
Absolutely. So in 2009, I think they showed that there was all this frozen water. So I think the first part is actually around the water capability, so we can support sustainable operations on the moon. The broader issue of space mining and asteroids, that's a longer term objective. And really, that's far away. I think the shorter term is, what are we doing on the moon? And as we explore those, Australia will be very mindful of its obligations.
And not sure this is inside your remit, but I'll ask you anyway. The Apollo 11 mission to the moon was part of the space race, the Cold War rivalry between Russia and the US, no doubt about it. Earlier this year, China's Chang'e 4 mission landed on the far side of the moon, the first country to do that. The US, China and Russia, the only nations to have actually landed on the moon. How much is geopolitics playing in this latest space race, in the US president's announcement on the 4th of July that we will be at the moon soon and Mars after that?
So I think space is one of those areas. It involves all nations, and there is a geopolitical nature to anything we do in space. I think our position is that we'll continue to advocate for the peaceful use of outer space.
I suppose I'm asking you, though, do you think the acceleration, which seems to be the acceleration of the NASA program under the instruction of the US president, how much of that is about, you know, the West versus the rest, or US and China dominance?
So my view, I think when we look at space, one of the things that space does do is it inspires, and it actually shows national capability, and it's a sense of pride. So as nations look at what's happening with their space endeavours, one of the reasons we're seeing this interest is it actually shows what a nation is capable of. But again, we're going to come back, and we're always, as we see these activities explore, we'll look at what are the impacts of space on our lives, but importantly, we'll continue to advocate that peaceful use of outer space.
Anthony Murford, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Anthony Murford is the Deputy Head of the Australian Space Agency.